Hello and welcome to another episode of Twimmel Talk, the podcast where I interview interesting people doing interesting things in machine learning and artificial intelligence. I'm your host, Sam Charrington. In this episode, University of Edinburgh PhD student George Papamakarios and I discuss his paper, Masked Autoregressive Flow for Density Estimation. George walks us through the idea of masked autoregressive flow, which uses neural networks to produce estimates of probability densities from a set of input examples. We discuss some of the related work that's laid the groundwork for his research, including inverse autoregressive flow, real NVP, and masked autoencoders. We also look at some of the properties of probability density networks and discuss some of the challenges associated with this effort. This Friday, June 1st, we'll begin working through the Fast AI Practical Deep Learning for Coders course. A bunch of you have already signed up and the Slack channel has been hosting some very lively discussion. If you'd like to learn deep learning with us, there are just three simple steps to join. First, sign up for the meetup at twimmelai.com/meetup. Noting fast.ai in the what you hope to learn box. Second, use the email invitation you'll receive to join our Slack group. And third, once you're there, join the Fast AI channel. I'll be publishing some additional information about how we'll work through the course in the next day or so, so stay tuned. If you have questions, feel free to shoot me a message on Twitter at Sam Charrington or via the contact form at twimmelai.com. See you soon. Finally, we continue to celebrate the second anniversary of the podcast, and we want to hear from you. Have you found this podcast useful? If so, we want to hear how. Post a comment over at twimmelai.com/2AV to let us know. And now, on to the show. All right, everyone. I am here at NIPS, and I'm with George Papamakarios.
Good to be here.
George is a PhD student at the School of Informatics at the University of Edinburgh, and he's here at NIPS having just presented a paper on masked autoregressive flow for density estimation, and I'm looking forward to learning more about what that's all about. George, welcome.
Great to be here. Thanks for inviting.
Absolutely. So you're in the School of Informatics. How did you get involved in, you know, what's the intersection between informatics and, you know, your research, and how did you come to get interested in machine learning?
So informatics is quite a general term. In Edinburgh, where I'm doing my PhD, the School of Informatics essentially came to be by combining computer science, artificial intelligence, and cognitive science. And an umbrella term for everything that has to do with information, either artificial information or, you know, natural information, came to be known as informatics. So my background, though, was in electrical engineering. So I did my undergraduate studies in electrical engineering. And then after I graduated, I was working as a research assistant doing computer vision. And I was actually working in a project where it was a fun project. We were trying to detect activities and classify activities. So we had in smart homes. So we had we put sensors and cameras in, you know, people's flats, and we could, you know, take measurements such as temperature and humidity, and we could track the person's location in the flat. And we wanted to infer what they were doing. Were they sleeping, watching television, doing the dishes, eating, etc. And that was a fun project. But it became obvious to me that it was very difficult to, you know, to figure out what the person was doing and being certain about it.
Right.
Because they could be doing anything, right?
Right.
What does a rise in temperature mean, for instance? And so that's how I got into machine learning and tried to infer information from data in a more principled way. Mm. And trying to quantify the uncertainty over that information, for instance. A person might be doing, you know, might be doing the dishes, but are we sure that they're doing the dishes?
Or maybe are they cooking?
Maybe they're cooking. So we have to be able to quantify uncertainty. That's how I got into machine learning, and in particular, Bayesian inference, and that's what brought me to Edinburgh to a PhD.
How has that interest kind of flowed into your current line of research?
So my I got interested in Bayesian inference, which is a principled way of making predictions at the same time quantifying uncertainty. And this has all to do with, you know, probability distributions and probability densities and, you know, a lot of probabilistic modeling. And it's difficult to get these probabilities. We have to how do we obtain the probability of data in the first place? And that's what brought me into doing research in density estimation, which is what the research I'm presenting here at NIPS is about.
And here we're talking about probability densities as opposed to material densities.
That's correct.
The technique you're using to estimate probability densities is mass autoregressive flow. What does that mean?
That's correct. So mass autoregressive flow is a deep neural network. That's what it is. So it's a deep neural network which takes data point, which could be an image, could be a time series, could be a piece of information, and spits out a number. And that number is the probability density associated with this data point. Essentially, it's a score that says how likely is this data point. For instance, if I'm trying to learn a probability density of our images, an actual image, like say an image of a person, would score high, so that the network would return a high score. And a random image, so an image of random noise, would return almost zero score. That tells you how plausible, how likely the image is. So that's what probability density is. And you can train such a network directly on data and get an estimate of what their probability density should be.
And so the probability density that the network is producing is it's a vector of what does it look like? I guess when I think of probability densities, I think of them, in terms of from an analytical sense, like is it, it could be a Gaussian with a certain set of parameters or some other kind of probability function.
Yeah.
Is this telling you the distribution as well as its parameters, or is it telling you, something else?
Yeah, there are many ways, to go about doing this. So it could be that the neural network spits out the parameters of a distribution. For example, if that distribution were a Gaussian, it would spit out the mean and the variance of that Gaussian, which defines that Gaussian. There are many ways of doing this. The challenge here, so if you chose, let's say, a particular type of distribution, say a Gaussian, that network would only be able to spit out Gaussians.
Right.
So the challenge here is to make it more flexible, because the data might follow a different distribution, right? So how can we make it flexible enough so that it can spit out whatever distribution the data happens to follow? And that's the challenge here. And that's what this paper was about, essentially, was proposing a very flexible mechanism, so a particular architecture that would spit out parameters that would describe a distribution that was very flexible.
Is it picking from some catalog of distributions that it knows about, or is there a type of distribution that is, high dimensional, very flexible, lots of parameters that, every other distribution is kind of a, degenerate version of, if you will?
It's a bit like both. It's more like the second one. So it is parametric in that it is described by, a set of parameters. But these parameters can adapt themselves.
In what ways?
So they can change. So you can imagine
they can change in value, or they can change in meaning and implication.
In value. So you can imagine a distribution being sort of like a rubber sheet that you put over data, and you can stretch that and squash it in many ways. And that's what the parameters describe, the stretching and the squashing of this flexible object. And by transforming this object, you can form it into a distribution that fits the data well. So that's the idea. These parameters describe how I would need to stretch and bend a simple distribution like a Gaussian in order to get a complicated distribution. That's essentially the idea.
What's this distribution called?
This distribution is the model, is mass total regressive flow.
Ah, okay.
So mass total regressive,
yeah. You, as part of this research, you identified or created this distribution, but also demonstrated how to calculate it from a data set.
So mass total regressive flow is essentially this neural network that squashes and stretches a simple distribution to form it into a more complicated distribution. It's free to learn what transformation to do. So you don't know what the end distribution is going to look like.
But you know, so by definition, the more simple distribution, the starting distribution?
Yes. Okay. You know that.
Just so I'm clear on this, is masked autoregressive flow your creation, or was that an existing thing that you then applied to density estimation?
This is my creation, which was inspired by very similar models in the literature. So there was a model before that, which was very similar, which is called inverse autoregressive flow. Another model, which is called real NVP, and another model, which is called masked autoencoder for distribution estimation. So all these are, you know, in the same family of models. And this one is essentially a continuation of the same idea and an application of previous ideas in the problem of density estimation.
In the paper, did you base your results on a particular input distribution, such as a Gaussian, or did you use something else?
In the paper, we did use Gaussians as base distribution, but that's fine because the idea of these models is that they're not limited by what a distribution you start with.
Right.
Because if you transform it in many ways, you can in the end get almost any distribution you like. So in the paper, what we did is we took various data sets, some of which were images, like MNIST or CIFAR. Others were time series, and there were two more data sets that described collisions in particle physics. So these data sets are all publicly available. And we trained the same model, so same neural networks, same deep model, to each one of them, and saw that it works well across a range of domains. So it's not particularly engineered to work well with images or something else.
Right.
So one of the motivations in the paper was to demonstrate generality as well.
And what was your metric of working well?
Test log likelihood. So having trained this deep neural network on training data and having, you know, tried to estimate the probability density in training data, does that probability density assign high scores to held out data? So this is the metric. So if we, let's say, have a data set of images, and we know they should all have high scores because they're all plausible images, and I don't use 10% of them for training, then the model I learn should assign high scores to these images that I held out as well.
Mm-hmm. And let me take a step back. Yeah. In this case, what does it mean to have a score for a given image?
It's the score is the value of the probability density.
The value of the probability density where? Or for what?
For that particular data point. So the probability density assigns a value to each data point. And this value should be high for data points that are typical, natural looking, if we're talking about images, and very small for unlikely objects.
So in the case of your test data, you've got an image, a complete image, and when you talk about the score, are we looking at an arbitrary pixel and the probability value for...
We're looking at the whole image.
The whole image.
The whole
image. So kind of an average score across all of the pixels, or
kind of. Each pixel would get an individual score, and the product of the scores would be the score of an image.
And so how is this, how would, do you envision this being applied?
That's a very good question. So what I described is one way to do unsupervised learning, right? So in unsupervised learning, what you have is, well, you have data, like unlabeled data, like a bunch of images that you downloaded from the web.
Yeah.
And you want to know something about the data. You don't have a specific, you know, goal in mind. You want to learn something about the structure of the data. So one way of doing this is by density estimation, because the density, which is the probability density that describes the data probabilistically, tells you that structure. So it's one way of doing generative modeling and unsupervised learning. For example, GANs and VAEs would be similar ways, but slightly different approaches. But what I'm particularly interested in, and the reason I got involved with density estimation to begin with, is for doing inference. As I said at the beginning, the probabilistic way of doing inference is, you know, recovering distributions over unknown information. So if we want to, for example, in the example I was talking about in the beginning, where you want to infer what activity a person is doing, mathematically, what you want to recover is a distribution over possible activities. And you could use these type of models, so these density estimators, these neural networks that learn densities, in order to learn densities over things that you don't know and you want to recover. So this is my motivation of using neural density estimation to do probabilistic inference.
So I'm thinking of applications that you know, we see a lot of, for example, GANs apply to, mm-hmm. you've got incomplete images and you're trying to reconstruct those images in some kind of way and you want to infer some of the missing data. Mm-hmm. That's an example of how you might apply this.
That would exactly be, yeah. So for example, you've seen half of the image and you want to infer what the other half would be. So what you want is a distribution or a density,
right,
over the pixels that you haven't seen, for instance. And that could be done potentially with this kind of models.
So the density that you, this, the mass autoregressive flow distribution, how many, does that have a fixed number of parameters or a variable number
of parameters? It has a fixed number of parameters. This is a design choice. So it's a neural network. It's a deep neural network, which essentially implements this transformation of the base density, and the parameters of that neural network is the parameters of
so
the density.
Then maybe not parameters in the way we're used to thinking about them for probability densities, but you know, they are hyperparameters for a neural network.
They are the weights and the biases of that neural network. It's difficult to interpret them.
Yeah, that was my question. Yeah. Like, is there like an intuitive, you know, transformation between those and what we might think of as the, you know, the parameters of a probability distribution?
Yeah,
it
exactly.
Sounds like no, not really.
It's yeah. So if we, let's say if the probability distribution is a Gaussian, then we can interpret the parameters. So the
right.
mean is, you know, the
mean
central
standard
location.
Deviation. Right, right.
Yeah, standard deviation is the width.
Right.
But now it's difficult to interpret what do the parameters of the neural network that, you know, describes this density do. Yeah, you're right.
And so is it even correct to think of these parameters as describing a density as opposed to describing a machine that spits out densities?
It's how you think.
Is
it
semantics?
It's mostly semantics.
Okay.
Yeah. you can think of them either way.
Okay.
I think.
And so what's the dimensionality of this parameter space?
It's huge. It's however big you design your neural network to be. So it's think of it as it's a modification over a standard feedforward neural network. And the parameters are the weights and the biases of this neural network. So you could have potentially thousands or millions of parameters.
And so what characterizes the architecture of this network relative to others?
Mm-hmm. So if I, let's say I take an arbitrary feedforward neural network, right? Standard, you know, standard stuff that we use, for example, for regression. And what we want, if we want this network to represent, if we want the output of this network to represent a probability density, then it has to have some properties. The first property is that it has to be non-negative. And the second property, which is a difficult one, is that the set of all outputs, the set of all possible probabilities have to sum to one. And these two properties are not trivial to ensure. And that's exactly what the research is about. How can we design the architecture of this neural network?
So that's kind of your starting point, and you design from there. Yes. Are there other requirements like that the outputs have to be continuous? Like, is that of interest or is that trivial?
They will be continuous and they will be differentiable because otherwise we wouldn't be able to learn the neural network. So given that the functions represented by neural networks are differentiable,
then
this is a requirement for being able to learn it.
Right.
Well, by learning, I mean, you know, backpropagate
derivatives.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, what was your process in then architecting a network to meet these criteria?
There is a line of research. For instance, the methods I mentioned before. So essentially, we continued from, you know, rely on the shoulders of giants.
Sure.
People have they've been there before you. So there were in the literature there were two types of models. The first one is called autoregressive model, and the second one is called a normalizing flow. And these are ideas of how to design the neural networks to satisfy these requirements.
So what do these individual ideas mean or represent?
Yeah, so the autoregressive model, it's essentially a neural net that has as many outputs as inputs, and each output is the parameters of a simple density of the corresponding input. So, for instance, the first input would be a mean and a variance of a Gaussian for the first output would be a mean and a variance of a Gaussian for the first input, and the second output would be a mean and a variance of a Gaussian for the second input. So they essentially break down the problem in estimating simple densities for each variable, for each input. If the input were an image, then that would be individual densities over each pixel. So they break down the problem of estimating a joint density of all inputs into the simpler problem of estimating a density of only one input at a time. So that's the idea.
Do you keep the parameters at each level, or are you only keeping the ones at the end?
Oh, you keep
all of them, right?
Yes,
yeah, that's where your information comes from.
Exactly.
Okay, got it.
So the collection of all of them
describes
your density.
Okay.
So that's autoregressive models, and there are many examples. So WaveNet is a model like this.
Okay.
Pixel RNN is a model like this. Pixel CNN. So these models are great at learning complex distributions over images or sound or other types of data as well. So that's one approach. The other approach is the normalizing flow approach. This is essentially what I was describing before. These neural networks take a random input coming from a simple distribution like a Gaussian, and they transform it and produce a data point. So essentially, they implement what I was describing before. They take a simple density, for instance, a Gaussian, and transforming it, stretching it like a rubber band in order to form a different density. So real NVP was this type of model. So our work was based on the idea that we can actually.
So before you go to this latter model, normalizing flow, is that
normalizing flow?
Normalizing flow. Are you? is your input data just sampling from a input distribution, or is there some kind of training data set or
it's
something
the
like that?
Random noise from an input distribution. It's like the generator of a GAN. So it's just random noise. And the output is data.
Okay.
And so in our work, the idea that we used is that you can actually, it turns out that some autoregressive models are actually normalizing flows. So there's a deep connection between these two type of model, which was really cool. And that gave us an idea of how to make normalizing flows better. And the idea was to use autoregressive models as normalizing flows. So that was, and that's exactly why we called this thing an autoregressive flow.
And so when you started with this idea of making them better, what were the particular things that you wanted to improve on?
So the challenge with designing neural density estimators, neural networks that estimate densities, is exactly that it's difficult to ensure that the outputs are actual densities, that they satisfy this properties of summing to one and being non-negative. And if you try to impose restrictions on the architecture in order to achieve that, you end up hurting expressivity. So you end up making the networks very rigid, very difficult to express complicated distributions. That's why we were trying to improve. We were trying to improve the expressivity of these type of models without hurting,
violating
the requirements.
And when you hurt expressivity, does that lead to a model that tends to underfit, a model that doesn't generalize?
Exactly.
What are all of the above?
Yeah. Underfitting could happen because the model is not expressive enough
right.
to represent a complicated density. So for instance, a complicated density can have a very strange shape in space, right? If the model can only represent Gaussians, then it will underfit. It will,
right.
you know...
force fit everything into
exactly.
that shape.
Exactly. Yeah. So it will try to sort of cover everything in the space, and it will end up assigning lots of probability to unlikely objects, like unlikely images, for instance. Yeah, that's what underfitting means in this context.
Are there other areas of your paper or presentation that we haven't covered thus far?
That was pretty much everything.
And so this work is kind of a stepping stone in a sequence of stepping stones.
Yes.
You know, where do you see it going?
I'm hoping that it will prove useful in doing inference. And there are many ways you can use it for doing inference. So in last year NIPS, we had another paper where we used a neural density estimator to learn posterior distributions. So that would be one way we can use it to do inference.
And what's the difference between learning a density estimator and learning the posterior?
The posterior is a density. It's a particular density that describes your beliefs about something you haven't seen. For instance, if you have an image and you have half of it and the other half is corrupted, then the density of the corrupted bit of the image would be the posterior of that part of the image given the part you've seen. So that would be a posterior.
But we use that same example to describe or to illustrate the work that you've done.
Mm-hmm.
But it sounded like you were drawing a distinction between the work that you've done and the work that you did with this paper and the previous one that was focused on
mm-hmm.
Posteriors. What's the distinction between the two?
So the distinction is that the previous paper was mainly on how to train it for inference, how to train. So given a neural density estimator, how can you train it to learn posteriors?
Got it.
And this one was, how can we design
a
good
density
estimator?
Got it. Got it.
So if we have a good one, if we have a good density estimator, and we also have a good way of training it to learn posteriors,
right?
Maybe we can...
Then we can actually use it for inference.
Yeah, we can use it for inference. Okay. Exactly. So that's the idea.
Okay. How did you benchmark the performance of the masked autoregressive flow model?
The benchmarking was done on general purpose density estimation tasks. So it was what I was describing before. We took...
With these three different tasks.
Yeah, we took a number of data sets and saw how well masked autoregressive flow can fit the density of the data set. The density of data is something we don't know, right? We know that, you know, we stipulate that that data comes from a density,
right.
But we don't know what it is,
right.
And we try to learn it by these type of models, by masked autoregressive flow, and if it has done a good job at learning the underlying density of the data, then it should assign high density to unseen data, and that's a benchmark we can use to test these models.
And so presumably you compare the results you saw with the previous generations of perform favorably.
Yeah, it's competitive.
Okay.
It's not clear what's the best model for, so given a data set,
right.
It's not clear what the best model is, because depending on the some density models are better at estimating cluster structure. Other models are better at estimating manifold structure, and some models work better in high dimensions, some models work better in low dimensions. So it's not easy. It's difficult to design a model that rules them all, right? That fits everything. So there's always the question, what do I use for my data set? We saw that masked autoregressive flow does well across a range of data sets, but it's not necessarily the best for each particular case. So still, if I'm interested in a particular data set, then I need to think what I should use. If I'm interested in a range of data sets, then something like masked autoregressive flow as a starting point is something I would probably use.
And did we explicitly cover what the masked in masked autoregressive
flow? Yeah, we didn't.
where that comes from?
So this comes from a previous model that we used ideas from. So that previous model was called masked autoencoder for distribution estimation. So we took the masked bit from that. And so that model was an autoregressive model. So it predicted one density at a time. So one density. So it had one output for every input, and that output was a density over the corresponding input. So the restriction that these models have is that the nth, so the fifth output is only allowed to be connected to the first four. It's not allowed to receive input from the fifth, the sixth, the seventh input. And in that particular paper, they enforced this restriction by masking out weights, connections in the network, by removing connections.
And that forces kind of like a summarization at different levels, concentration or something.
It forces that the fifth output doesn't cheat by looking at the actual value of the fifth input. That's what it does. And it's in technical terms, what it does, it decomposes a join density into a product of conditionals.
Okay.
And each output density is one of those conditionals, and conditionals are conditioned on only previously seen inputs and not on future ones. So masking was the technique they used for doing this. And so it's a very clever idea, and we took this idea from there.
Awesome. Well, George, thanks so much for taking some time to chat with me about this. I really enjoyed learning about what you're up to.
It was a pleasure for me.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks very much.
All right, everyone. That's our show for today. For more information on George or any of the topics covered in this episode, head on over to twimlai.com/talk/145. Also, take a moment to show us some love for the podcast's second anniversary and share how it's been helpful to you over at twimlai.com/2AV. And finally, thanks so much for listening and catch you next time.